Okay, we're going to take your phone calls this hour with the folks from Ripley's Believe It or Not, so get ready on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're with Tim O'Brien and Edward Meyer. Edward, what determines how much you spend for an item? How do you even start with a price?
Well, that's a very good question. Like anything else, it's really supply and demand. If I really want it, if I really need it, I haven't got six already on the shelf, I'm willing to pay a little more. But, generally speaking, for much of the kinds of material we buy, we establish the price. You know, there isn't too many other people buying two-headed cows. So if I want a two-headed cow, I make the offer that it's worth to me.
Guys, there's a reality show here. You know how they're doing that pawn show, the pawnbroker show? There's something here. I bet we can get Discovery to do something with you.
Yeah.
Somebody comes in with a shrunken head and said, "Hey, I want $2,000 for this." And you
open
negotiate.
The door for us, will you? On that one,
you're not the first one to suggest that, George.
That would work. I mean, you never know. It's a great idea.
Edward could be our next matinee hero here.
I love. We're going to take some calls here too, in a moment. What is the strangest thing you have in the collection?
Go for it, Edward.
Well, a few minutes back, we started to talk about the Abominable Snowman. I would say one of the strangest, it's always hard to say the strangest, but one of the strangest is I have this hair from one of Tim's favorite words, cryptozoologist, a guy that studies, legendary mythological monsters. But it came from a lamasery, a Buddhist temple up in the Himalayas, and they've revered this chunk of hair, and they've actually got like a scalp, for a couple hundred years, and I was fortunate enough to talk them into giving me a few locks of the hair, and I don't think there's anywhere else in America you're going to see a piece of the Abominable Snowman.
Oh my gosh, incredible! Now, how much would you pay if somebody said, "This is the rock that was blocking the tomb where Jesus was, and here's a piece of it," and you could authenticate that?
Probably a lot of money.
I think so. That
that one would be pretty high on the price.
You might probably have to negotiate with against the Vatican. I think they'd go after it.
We've got a crown of thorns made from the thorns of the so-called same bush that the crown of thorns was made from, but we didn't pay a lot for that, but it's one of the only, Christian religious artifacts in our collection.
Have collectors offered you things? For example, has somebody said, "I've got the Ten Commandments," or strange things like that?
Yes, is the answer. Certainly not the Ten Commandments, but a lot of our material comes from individuals who have a real passion for something very specific, and I've met people that collect just about anything from airplane vomit bags to pest dispensers to religious artifacts, and those are some of our best suppliers.
I've got a friend who collects those little candy things. What were they, Pezzes? Is that what they were called? Yeah, he's got them all. Tim, this has got to be a fun job for you.
It's a dream job, absolutely. After 36 years as being a legitimate journalist, I got to transfer over, and as a lot of my journalist friends say, go into the dark side of PR. But to go with a company like Ripley's, for the last 18 years I had been chronicling the amusement park, fairs, carnival, sideshow, circus industries. So when I decided that it was time for a mid-age change,
right,
I kind of slid over into Ripley. And, wow, it's 10 years ago, and it's been a wonderful ride. It's just working with people that are absolutely brilliant about hundreds of different things, like Edward. You learn so much, and it's so much fun. And, people say, "What's the best part of my job?" And I think it's opening my email every morning, because you had absolutely no idea what's going to be in there.
And when I bet you see people and they shake their heads in disbelief.
Oh, It is. I love the sideshow. I go more toward the sideshow stuff, the live performance side of the Believe It or Not, the sword swallowers, the blockheads, the glass eaters. And, you know, you look at these people and you see these things that they can do, and it's just really awesome. You know, we went to the Ringling Circus a couple weeks ago, and my daughter, who's 24 years old, was sitting next to me. She loves the circus, and we're sitting there, and we're watching the show. And after one of the Globe of Death, the motorcycles where they spin around and around and around in this little cage, after that ended, they all come over, and to get their applause, they take their helmets off and run off to the side of the ring and look at the group of people and the audience and wave. And we're sitting in like the fifth or sixth row, and I see one of my friends, John Nock, who I had no idea was there. And, you know, I went, "Hey, John." And he looked at me and he says, "Hey, Tim, come backstage afterward." I said, "Okay." And I looked over at my daughter, and she's got her hand over her face, and she says, "Oh, my God, he even knows circus people."
I love it. Hey, you know what? Why don't you once a month, find me the Ripley Strange Person of the Month, and I can interview him for a little bit on this program. You know, the guy who eats the sword and stuff like that. I'd love to do that, and then maybe we can put the video on our website that you folks have done. People can look at that. And, you know, it's a broader way for people to get to know Ripley, even bigger than they do. But I'd like to do that.
You know, that goes back to, and we can do that with no problem, George. You know, it goes clear back to Ripley when he opened his first auditorium in 1933 at the Chicago World's Fair, where he basically had two parts of it. He had one part on the exhibits that he had brought back from different lands, and then the back side was a 10-in-1 sideshow, basically 10 different sideshow acts. And he was one of the first people to actually exhibit a lot of this stuff. In fact, the people were so astounded back then that he had to put in cots and nurses for people who would be passing out from seeing a sword
yeah,
or seeing somebody
exactly
knocking a nail off their nose, things like that. So, oh, yeah, I mean, I would love this. And on February 26th, just a couple weeks from now, we will be hosting the World Sword Swallowers Day event.
Oh, my. Does anybody get hurt?
Yeah, they do, occasionally, and that's what makes sword swallowing special.
This is not a trick, is it?
It is not a trick. A lot of people think that the sword goes up into the hilt.
Or it's one of those retractable things.
That's... Yeah, but, you know, we've got a lot of sword swallowers who have really been friends for Ripley's for many, many, many years. And, no, it is not a trick. I mean, they're... And anymore, you know, with the way society wants more and more and more, simple swallowing a sword, dropping a sword down your throat isn't a big deal. The big things now, we've got rocket-powered swords.
By the way, kids don't do that at home.
We always make that disclaimer.
Oh, my. I bet your legal department goes nuts with all these things, waivers and everything.
Oh, yeah, and we have to... You should see the disclaimer that a sword swallower has to fill out before he walks through our front door.
Oh, my gosh. Now, would somebody in the Guinness Book of World Records qualify for being in the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum, for example? The guy who eats 55 pies or something? Or is that different?
Well, we don't look at it like Guinness does. People try to be in a Guinness World Record. Very few people actually get in their book and in their archives by trying to do something, not attempting to do something. People want to strive to be a Guinness World Record holder. But on the other hand, Ripley's, very few people say, you know, like the guy with the 800 piercings, he didn't do that just to be in the Ripley book. You know, we look at the people, the odd people, who the people that might really, really work hard to become a world record holder, but we don't look at it from the fact that this guy has the most tattoos or this guy has the most whatever, or he has run the fastest or whatever. We look at this guy from a personal standpoint and think, you know, what kind of a weird person is this that would dedicate his life to do things like this?
Yeah.
So we look at the people side of it.
I know one person who's in the Guinness Book of World Records. She lives in St. Louis. Her name's Jody. You can find her on YouTube. She is the world's loudest burper. That's her claim to fame.
We would put her in Ripley's, too.
Yeah, there she is. Let's
do a great film on her and put her right there in Ripley's.
I'll get her in touch with you guys. She is unbelievable. She does this at restaurants, and everyone who knows her laugh. But there's always that one person who's eating dinner who thinks she's real, and they leave. They can't take it.
And you know this person personally, George?
Yeah, I do. I don't frequent with these people, but to the phones we go. Speaking of St. Louis, Scott's there, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Scott.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure
I have been a huge Ripley fan for all my life. Matter of fact, it taught me how to read. I used to hate to read, but a neighbor in Chandler, Arizona, shared a Ripley's book with me. And because the segments are in short little paragraphs, by the way, I wish the Ripley's books were in short little paragraphs, not like the, you know, they have all the panels. But I loved it when Ripley was expository, when he actually told his story in there. Two of my favorite stories are from series 3 and 5, I think. One dealt with a series of shipwrecks and savings from a shipwreck that joined a sailor from the first shipwreck to the sixth shipwreck with where his sick mother was on.
Oh, my God.
And she was near death. And because he saw her, she saw her son, it provided her the momentum in life to continue living. And this story can be, they say it can be authenticated in the Australian archives. It was in the Torres Strait, the strait between New Guinea and Australia. Another story was also a sea story that dealt with a publicist who threw bottles into the water that had pages of the book in it, and one had a coordinate in it that said there was a shipwreck, the ship was wrecked at this particular coordinate. Well, it turned out that lo and behold that somebody picked it up and went to this spot, and there was a shipwreck that was actually there, and they saved the crew. And this is either the third or the fifth, and these are some stories that I just that sent shivers up my spine. And also, Ripley taught me how to spell fish. G-H-O-T-I. G-H is in stuff. O as in women, and T-H is motion. So that's how you spell fish. But anyway, to get to my question, I understand that Jim Carrey is making a movie about Ripley's life called Ripley's Believe It or Not. I wonder if the gentlemen there know the status of the movie and if it is still in production.
All right.
Will be produced.
Let's find out.
Well,
that would be you, Tim, huh?
Well, yeah, but I think Edward's a little closer. But yeah, it's not a rumor. Jim Carrey is definitely interested in it. And we just got some. Edward has actually read all the various scripts and is actually working with the new scriptwriter, Edward. So why don't you pick it up from there?
Well, certainly Jim Carrey has had his name attached to this now for about 5 years. We've been through two or three producers. We've been through four or five different writers. And
this would be a serious movie based on his life, right?
Well, I don't know if I'd call it too serious. It's in the Indiana Jones sort of
genre. You know, okay.
It's based on real Ripley stories, but it's been fictionalized, and it's got some Hollywood glamour and zing to it.
Sure.
You know, the whole point in anybody's movies these days are you want to make more than one. So written as in, Ripley's travels in India. So if it's successful, you can do part two as travels in South America, and part three is travels in Africa, et cetera. But it's high adventure is how I would describe it.
And he went to 201 countries, so there's 200 sequels right there, right?
No, were all the stories real, or did he put in some
You know, all real.
They were all real.
If our name is on it in our books, our TV show, our movies, our museums, we stand behind it as being 100% authentic.
Yet some people would not believe it based on just the fact that it was Believe It or Not.
And thus the title. Uh-huh. You know, truth is stranger than fiction quite often. And, you know, the harder it is to believe, the better a Believe It or Not it is.
Now, are you updating this, too? I mean, I would guess there were still new things.
Day.
Yeah. Strange things are out there happening, and, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, we try.
Like these birds that die and fall from the sky. That would be perfect.
Yes.
You know.
The recent stories in Arkansas.
Yep, absolutely. Nobody knows what happened, but we know they're dead. You know, 5,000 birds fell from the sky.
And then 100 miles down the road, another, you know, few hundred.
Yep, and now what's
and
happening
then another
worldwide.
100 miles down the road, a bunch of fish died. So something's going on in Arkansas.
You got it. Victorville, California. Roy, go ahead. You're up with us. Go ahead, Roy.
Oh, hello. How you doing?
Hi. Good.
All right. Yeah. I got a question for you.
Okay.
You know, that because you mentioned earlier about the Shroud of...
Turin.
Turin, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, with the Shroud and the image and that, you know, that you would like to have that, Ripley,
yep.
for the show. But I had a thought about that because I've seen a documentary on that particular subject about the image, right?
That's right.
And that the image on that Shroud, supposedly that was the moment of the burst of the energy, right?
That's right.
Right, so why is the eyes closed? Shouldn't the eyes be open at the moment of the burst of energy? Your eyes, they would open up, right?
So, well, you don't know that, not necessarily. Just, you know, just even pretend that you're dead and you burst. Maybe the eyes open a second later. You know, so you don't know, but boy, that would be a great find to have that. Shroud of Turin.
It certainly is one of the great archaeological pieces in the entire world. And, you know, anybody that is anywhere near Turin in Italy should go see it.
Next up, let's go to Dorothy in Torrance, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Dorothy, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a statement to before I have my question.
Well, in
that is, hold on.
Just do it.
I have a son named Tim O'Brien, believe it or not. And I can verify that because I named him.
Mom!
Oh!
Not quite. He's a teacher in Los Angeles County area. Like, I was a teacher and my mom was a teacher and my grandma was a teacher.
Sorry, Tim.
But
this is not your life.
All those wonderful, believe it or not, cartoons and the comic books. When I was a kid, my mom would let me buy the comic books because she felt that those were really good for kids to read. And they were real. They were honest. And you could believe them. And there was a song back then called Faraway Places with Strange Sounding Names. And that's what I associated with Ripley's Believe It or Not. And I would dream, I would think about, oh, going to those places. I just loved it.
It was and still is one of the most fantastic things I've ever read, touched, looked at. It's something that you remember for years. We'll be back with final questions with the guys from Ripley in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, David Cereda joins us with a breaking story on something happening in the Bermuda Triangle, some anomaly there. He'll explain all about that when we come back next hour on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, by the way, I'm told that our Android app is getting very close to being finalized. Should even happen this month. I'll have more information soon. If you're interested in becoming a Coast Insider and you've got that Android app and you need to use it, it'll be pretty soon. So just go to coasttocoastam.com and you can sign up to be a Coast Insider. And welcome back to Coast. We've got Tim O'Brien, Edward Meyer from Ripley's, Believe It or Not, in your phone calls. Let's go right back. Kira in Franklin, Pennsylvania. First time caller. Hi, Kira.
Hi, it's Kyra.
Kyra.
But, George, I love your show. I'm absolutely addicted to it. I think it's wonderful.
Well, thank you.
The reason I'm calling is because my husband's a contractor, And a couple of days ago, he went to do a job where he needed to lay new flooring.
Mm-hmm.
Underneath the carpet were several newspapers, really old ones. And he brought home the comic weekly section from the Pittsburgh Sun-Telegraph. And it's dated July 4th, 1943.
Believe it or not.
And on page 2, there's a half page that says, Believe It or Not by Ripley. And it's just an intricate cartoon. And the funny thing is, it says, there were 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence, yet not one of them ever fell from grace, none by word or deed or ever tarnished his fame, but remained pure in public and private, and none ever proved himself blamable or unworthy.
How about that?
God bless our forefathers.
We need more of them.
It's just, I thought it was so bizarre. I mean, I just was looking at it a couple hours ago and turned on your show and who you had on.
Here we are.
It's
synchronicity. You got to keep that and frame it and put some glass on top of it or something.
Yeah, I'd really like to. There's even a sidebar that has like a couple of tiny ones, and it says Little Bill Collingo has worn the same red, white, and blue tie each year for 44 years.
That's right. Now, were those?
I like the fact that she mentioned that it was a half of a page. That attests to the popularity of Ripley during his time, that he gets that much ink. You know?
Were they black and white, or were they in color at that point?
Oh, it's vibrant color, actually.
Is it?
The Sunday's always been in color.
Beautiful.
Okay, Kira, thank you. Or Kyra.
The Sunday's always been in color.
That must have been pretty expensive to print up in those days, huh?
Well, again, it attests to his popularity that the paper would have that much faith to give him, you know, and some papers ran at full page.
And so did he live out his days in New York, or did he come back to the West Coast?
He's buried in Santa Rosa,
right.
But he lived the majority of his life in New York City.
And like you say, he was well-known wherever he went. Was he like a celebrity?
Oh, absolutely. Tim said earlier, rock star. In a day where, you know, there is no television, he would have been as popular as anybody you could measure today.
What would he say about things today? The internet, television, radio, how would he feel about all that?
Well, I'm sure he would say that there's never going to run out of Believe It or Not. I mean, every new invention gives him a whole new field to explore.
Sure does. Mike is in Illinois. Go ahead, Mike. You're up with us.
Hey.
Hi, Michael.
Love your show, man.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mike.
I do have a question. Do you guys have any what you believe to be physical proof or existence of UFOs or aliens or extraterrestrials?
Has any of that come your way, even though I know, Edward, you were saying you don't put those in a museum, but have you gotten any information about ET life?
Well, it does come our way, but it's not typically something we acquire. But I've had three or four people walk into my office with little green men in jars that they are convinced came from outer space or, you know, something similar. And we've always had lots of people showing us video of unexplained things flying through the sky and stuff. But it's generally, you know, I'm willing to look at it, but it's not something we usually buy.
Oh, now, let's go back to the little meat green men in a jar. Do you, like, take them out of the jar and analyze them? What do you do with these things?
Well, when necessary. My funniest story is somebody claiming that he had a chupacabra. Again, a mythical creature as opposed to an alien, but it looked in a jar, and it looked like everybody draws a Martian. You know, it had this big green head and funny slanted eyes, and, you know, looked like a comic book version of what people think aliens look like. And much to the horror of the gentleman who owned it, yes, I just opened the jar, put my hand in, and pulled the thing out. Said, well, it kind of feels like a carved rock to me.
Yeah.
And I actually banged it on the table. So, it doesn't feel very
flesh-like. You got to check it out. I'm a friend of mine does a country program syndicated. It's called After Midnight. His name's Blair. And when he moved down to Nashville, he gave me his alien in a jar. because I always wanted it. And
how many people have these?
Yeah, exactly. This thing I'm convinced is made out of rubber, but I'm not going to reach in there and grab the thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm the guy that would reach in and grab
you
it.
You wouldn't pull it out. Okay, Mike, thanks for your call. Let's go next to Pekin, Illinois. Jory, east of the Rockies. Hi, Jory.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good.
Nice to hear from you again.
You too.
I've got a pretty bizarre question for the guests, Tim O'Brien and Edward Meyer.
All right.
Okay, I remember Ripley's Believe It or Not way back when I was in third grade. Of course, I'm not much of a TV watcher. I listen to the radio more than anything. But I do remember an episode, and they could tell me whether if it's true or not, about the episode with the guy that ate a whole airplane. Is that true?
Yeah, Michelle Alito. It's funny. Every time I do a radio show about this time of night, somebody brings him up. He's from Paris and called the Great Mangetou, meaning he'll eat anything. And very strange diet. Medical oddity is called pica, that people that eat strange things. And Michelle actually ground up the metal of an entire airplane, a small airplane, a two-seater thing.
A little Cessna.
But still an airplane. And it took him about 3 weeks to do it, but he ate an entire airplane. And he's done bicycles, and he's done glass, and, you name it, he's put it down his stomach.
Believe it or not, that is weird. And he's okay?
Now deceased, but did this...
What did he die of?
Did this for 40, 50 years. It was his entire life. It wasn't just something he did for, publicity. He really relished, pun intended, eating odd objects.
Let's go to Scotty in San Juan Island, Washington, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Scotty.
Hey, George. Good to talk to you again.
Me too.
Tim and Ed, I got a question similar to the guy a couple of callers back, but... I just wondered if anybody has ever tried to sell you like an extraterrestrial spacecraft or something like that, And I'm a big fan of Ed Big Daddy Roth's custom cars from back in the mid '60s,
Well, we've had pieces offered to us, but nobody's brought in a whole rocket ship,
You never know.
But little pieces of metal or little pieces of glass with funny lights or something. Oh, we found this out in the deserts of New Mexico or Arizona, and we don't know what it is and how it got there, but no one's come in with anything that really looks like it came out from outer space.
Have any well-known or prominent people, Edward, come to you and say, hey, do you want to buy my shoes or anything like that?
Yes, it's usually a third-party collector, though, and shoes is a funny one. About 6 months ago, we had somebody that has something like 800 pairs of celebrity shoes, had Frank Sinatra shoes, John Travolta shoes, Marilyn Monroe shoes, and, I don't know how he got them all, but, his entire life had been collecting the celebrity shoes. But,
he's got a foot fetish, there's no doubt about that.
Most celebrity things we have would come from a third party. Things that come directly from the individual, it would usually be me asking them as opposed to them asking me.
Anything from Houdini in any of the museums?
Yeah, we have quite a collection of locks and chains and things that he had escaped from. Most of it, is 100% authentic. You look at it and go, how'd he get out of this?
This is really priceless. This collection truly is priceless.
Well, we like to think so. Tim mentioned earlier, we've got over 20,000 artifacts, and a great deal of it is one-of-a-kind material.
Absolutely. You're still Orlando-based, right?
That's correct. Canadian-owned company, but headquartered in Orlando, Florida.
Publicly held or private?
Private.
Private company. And I guess they're what, into all kinds of entertainment in museums, everything like that?
Yeah, it's the Jim Pattison Group out of Vancouver, Canada. And very diversified, roughly 40 different companies under the same banner of Jim Pattison, and everything from car dealerships to grocery stores to sign companies to Ripley's, believe it or not.
That's got to be, Ripley's has got to be the jewel in his package.
Well, we're certainly the most international of his companies.
That's true. Charlie in Mississippi, first-time caller. Hi, Charlie. Go ahead.
Hey, George. You might remember me from the backyard UFO in Kentucky.
Yeah.
Anyway, these gentlemen acquired some mummies that a friend of mine in Oklahoma, in Walton, Oklahoma, owned for many years. And he leased them, and they were lost for 20-some-odd years. Until they showed up in an attic in a building in Dallas or Fort Worth, where a man had purchased this building, and he stumbled across these mummies and called the news people. And so my friend was watching TV when he saw that, and he was able to produce his papers and recover those mummies. And they're called the Martindale mummies.
Currently in our museum in Guadalajara, Mexico.
Oh, heck. Well, my friend Claude Smith was the original owner there, and he was also my barber and went to church with him.
Well, I'm the guy that bought him.
Oh, okay. I think he passed away. His son inherited them, and I think his son might have sold them to someone else. I'm not sure if he's the one who sold them to you.
How much did they sell for, Charlie? You want to tell us?
I don't recall. I don't recall.
And you won't disclose, Edward. I can't ask you. You won't tell me.
No, you won't get that info from me.
No.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right, Charlie. I appreciate the call. Small world. What are the odds of finding somebody who had known somebody who sold you something?
The Martindale mummy is one of the most interesting because it's a female holding a baby. So it's two mummies in one. But
where are the mummies purportedly to be from? Where they originate from?
They are what is called what's the best way to term it? Preserved by nature as opposed to embalmed by a doctor, and they are American desert mummies. New Mexico, Arizona, places with the right climate.
Estimated age is what?
1800s.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Eric, Springfield, Missouri, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Eric. Thanks for calling.
Guys, I don't have a little green man in a jar, but I'm a great big man with green with envy. You guys have probably the greatest job in the world. I'm telling you, I've got a master's degree in anthropology, and half the time I dreamt about working for you guys when I was a kid. You guys put out a coffee table book a few years ago that talked about a Japanese sculpture done by an artist. It was a self-portrait where the guy actually, carved himself. And
was Hananuma Masakichi. It was done in the 1890s. We still have the exhibit itself. It's in our museum in Wisconsin, Dells, Wisconsin. It was Robert Ripley's personal favorite item of his entire collection. It was his number one thing. He bought it in San Francisco in 1934. It was first displayed in the 1934 Chicago Auditorium. We've had it since then and put it in several different museums over the year. Still one of my personal favorites, too. Self-portrait. Ripley called it the most lifelike human statue ever made. 20,000 little tiny dovetailed pieces of wood all together so that it looks like it's seamless, one piece, carved by the guy in a room full of mirrors so he could see his body from every angle.
What genius.
He was dying of tuberculosis. This was his memorial to his girlfriend. Something to leave behind for her.
Robert Ripley accumulated how many items before, the corporation started?
Well, that's a tough call. The family took a few things when he died in 1949.
And where was the original museum?
Well, the very first museum was in Chicago.
Okay.
At the time of his death, the only museum was in New York City. The auction of what went for sale was roughly 5,000 pieces and took 5-day auction to get rid of it all. And that was everything from grains of rice with writing on them to his Chinese junk, the Mon Lay. So, you know, it must have been the auction of the century.
I mean, he would have probably put in Galileo's telescope, for example, if he had one, right?
Yeah. Well, interesting, his art collection in particular, because remember, he's a cartoonist. He likes to draw. He had Rembrandts. He had a couple Raphaels. He had a Michelangelo sketch.
Oh, geez.
All in the same auction as, you know, toothpick sculptures.
Edward, maybe you know this, maybe you don't. Where's the skull of Adolf Hitler?
I do not know.
Neither do
I. We do know where the bathroom, the toilet of Adolf Hitler, it's in a used car lot in New Jersey.
No.
Discover that.
I bet on this planet somewhere there are collectors, folks with mega bucks, who must have some bizarre artifacts that they have purchased over the years somehow.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, there's all kinds of people that collect very strange things. You know, talking about mummies a second ago, there's a gentleman just outside of Baltimore that probably has more mummies in his house than, you know, the average museum has.
I've always wondered if somebody really has the Ark of the Covenant, for example.
Well, that'd be a good one. If you're a big fan of Ripley TV shows, one of our shows early, I don't know, 2000, 2001, we traced where it's supposed to be in this church in a little island in the middle of the Sudan, but they wouldn't let us go in and see it. So still don't know if it's really there or not.
You never know. Okay. What's your website, Tim?
Ripley's.com. And I think one thing that we have brought up here at the very last of the show, George, is the fact that, you know, Ripley's, a lot of people think, oh, that's weird, that's gross, two-headed cows, shrunken heads. But I think one thing we've discussed these last 2 hours is that, as Edward pointed out, the artwork and the non-mainstream historical significant artifacts that we have, you can't find anywhere else.
It is a well-diversified company and museums all over the place. Thanks, you two. Tim O'Brien, Edward Meyer from Ripley's, Believe It or Not. When we come back, strange anomalies happening in the Bermuda Triangle. David Cerita joins us. Our last hour, we will have open lines with a Believe It or Not hotline. I'll tell you about that later.